Welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Flissy. This is a podcast about records. Today's album is Thank You, Music Lovers by Spike Jonze and his City Slickers on RCA Victor Records from 1960, catalog number LPM2224.
So I actually have no idea where you bought this record, but we bought it fairly recently, right?
Yeah, we bought it in Portland at the, I don't remember. It was the one that had like the multiple vendors.
Yes.
I think that was Millennium Music on Hawthorne.
So you have known about and have been looking for a Spike Jonze album for some time.
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
And I had never really heard of any Spike Jonze music, but how did you find out about Spike Jonze in the first place?
I found out about Spike Jonze, like many of the artists we feature on the show, through the Ultra Lounge albums. And I think, he does a Nutcracker Suite on one of the Christmas albums. And I can't remember what other... There's a couple songs of Spike Jonze on the Ultra Lounge albums, and that's how I found out about him. And it's marked by this like sort of anarchist, wild use of instrumentation, and that appeals to me.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about what this album looks like then, Flissy?
So the cover is illustrated by Jack Davis, who was one of the founding artists of Mad Magazine, which might give you a clue as to the direction this album is heading. It's like got this palette of sort of like red and purple background of these audience, assuming the audience members throwing apples and stomping on a checkered suited Spike Jonze, who's giving kind of a smirk with a little speech bubble that says "Thank you, music lovers," and then like up in the corner it says Spike Jonze and big block letters with the track listing. And I think it says something about like Spike Jonze's funniest songs or something, but the price tag is covered over that specific detail. And then on the back again it has "Thank you, music lovers" with Spike Jonze. Another illustration by Jack Davis and some commentary by Frank Jacobs, who is another writer for Mad Magazine. And on the side, it's got a little sidebar with the track listings and the featured artists.
All right. Well, why don't we get right to our first clip so we can get a taste of what this album is all about.
So what did you pick?
So I picked the William Tell Overture, a classical classic.
Okay. Let's take a listen.
It's a beautiful day for the race. Stooge Hand is the favorite today. Assault is in there. Dog Biscuit is 3-1. Safety Pin has been scratched. And at 20-1, Beetlebum. Now the horses are approaching the starting gate, and there they go!
All right. So what do you think, Flissy?
This is just like tons of fun. If there is such a thing as like audio slapstick, I think this might be it. It's got this funny commentary by Doodles Weaver, who I think is actually this guy's real name. And it's like this interpretation of the William Tell Overture with all these like horse race commentary. It's funny.
Yeah, so I find this album interesting. I mean, right away, I was kind of I don't even know how to explain, like, confused and intrigued by it, that there's these sound effects going on. And, like, in this song in particular, you can hear that sometimes, like, the melody is actually just, like, made up of sound effects.
Yeah, I think that's, like, a really amazing thing about this album and Spike Jonze in general.
And, yeah, I mean, in a way, it reminds me of Looney Tunes, not the least of which is because the William Tell Overture was used frequently.
Uh-huh.
In you know, cartoons from, I guess, you know, this era, or, you know, a few decades earlier. And I definitely appreciated it and knew that this was going to be the song that I was going to pick right away when they started with the puns and the names of the horses and saying that Cabbage was out in front by a head, or that Banana was coming up through the bunch and Assault is passing Battery, or that Mother is nagging in the rear. But my favorite is the winner, Beetle Bum.
I think Doodles Weaver's, like, voice acting in this piece is just so good. It's like, he's talks so fast that you could definitely overlook those puns if you're not paying close attention. And then, like, the delivery of Beetle Bum, it's just so funny.
Yeah, and I like it. I mean, there's actually a song on the second side, Dance of the Hours, which is another classical piece that uh-huh. is in a similar vein, though instead of being a horse race, I guess it is a car race.
Uh-huh.
Similarly makes no sense, and somehow Beetle Bum is the winner of that race as well. So I'm glad to see Beetle Bum make a reappearance on side two.
Yeah.
But so, okay, I'm very confused about this album, so can you tell us a little bit about Spike Jonze?
So Spike Jonze was born Lindley Jonze, and he was nicknamed Spike because he was skinny like a railroad spike. His father worked for the Southern Pacific Railroad, and so, you know, it's a railroad family. That's how he got that Spike nickname. And a railroad chef taught him how to use pots and pans as musical instruments. So not, like, totally sure where that happened in the Spike Jonze timeline, but... he started playing percussion instruments as a child. And so, you know, I think you could definitely see the appeal of maybe you had an uncle or like his dad's friend was the chef, if he was already playing some percussion to introduce these like kitchen items as musical instruments. And then through the 30s, he played in a whole bunch of orchestras. He played for John Scott Trotter, who backed Bing Crosby for the first recording of White Christmas. And then John Scott Trotter was the band leader for the backing band for Bing Crosby. And he also played in pit orchestras for theaters. And so he was like, you know, it's not surprising that the William Tell Overture and the Book of Hours is featured on this album, because he's obviously very familiar with orchestral music. And so... like, he and his orchestra buddies, basically, they got really tired of playing the very same pieces every night. And so, like, they just would mess around and do, like, silly versions of the songs that they played. And initially, they just recorded some of the tracks just to, like, go home and show their families, like, look at this thing, like, me and my buddies are doing. And then... like, officially, like, in the 1940s, he founded the City Slickers band, and that is where all this, all these shenanigans come from. These are the City Slicker recordings for RCA, and there's, like, a whole bunch of musicians that played with Spike Jonze between the 1940s and 1950s, but some of the prominent ones were Doodles Weaver, who, of course, is doing this commentary on the William Tell Overture, Paul Frees, who's a voice actor and comedian who is most notably, at least in my world, as the voice of Boris in the Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons. Also George Rock, and also Carl Grayson. So those guys were responsible for a lot of the like voice acting and the like gulping and chirping and like vocal sound effects on these Spike Jonze albums. And in 1942, this song, Der Führer's Face, was Spike Jonze's first real hit as his, as on his own rather than with these orchestras that he was playing with in the 30s. And that was number three in the U.S. And this is a satire about Hitler. And so there was a film short that was, be played on before movies on movie reels, and it would have like this little pitch afterwards, like, don't forget to buy your war bonds. And so like that really was the thing that launched Spike Jonze into popularity, that satirical piece. And then in 1946, like, he was getting a little bit bummed out because all people knew him for were these satirical comedy pieces, and he wanted to like show the public that he is like a legit musician as well. And so in 1946, he formed this other orchestra, like literally that's what it's named, Other Orchestra. And it had serious versions of all sorts of popular songs and orchestral songs. Then in the 1950s, his career was kind of hit a little bit by rock and roll, which kind of brought its own novelty type songs into the rotation, but he still kept at it. Like, this was his shtick for pretty much the whole deal. And he died pretty young in 1965 from emphysema. He was only in his 50s.
Yeah, I have to admit that I was sort of confused by the idea of this being Spike Jonze, because the only Spike Jonze I knew was the actor slash director slash producer who directed Being John Malkovich, an adaptation on the sort of art filmy side, and then a bunch of other less cerebral stuff, like I guess he's one of the co-creators of Jackass, and I guess he was actually nicknamed after Spike Jonze.
Right, yeah, it's like a what do you call it, pseudonym. Yeah,
so interesting. So what did you pick, Flissy? What's your pick?
So my pick is the last track on this album, on side B. It's the Hawaiian War Chant.
All right, so let's take a listen.
Sun pulls away from the shore, and our boat sinks slowly in the west. We approach the island of Lulu, spelled backwards.
Ul-ul.
Ah, in the distance we hear Spike Jonze and his wacky wackakians.
All right, well, I think it's interesting this track is being billed, I guess, to the Spike Jonze and his wacky Wakikians with chorus. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's actually any sort of different composition than his City Slickers, but I guess part of the theme here. And this song, I like it. It's one of, it's a sort of Hawaiian classic that you can also hear a version that was done by the Surfers, who we featured on a previous episode, on their album On the Rocks. And I guess this is sort of a song that, people play when they want to sort of have the stereotypical Hawaiian sound. And I think that despite all of the nonsense, it's actually a fairly good version of this track. What do you think, Lizzie?
I think so too. And it's interesting that you say that this is the song that you play if you want to sound Hawaiian. Like, I think this might actually be written by a non-Hawaiian person. I'd have to double check on that, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is a product of some like exotica. And it is like, the intro is a little bit offensive. They're like absolutely like making some faux tribally kind of sounds. But I really like that. This is something that Spike Jonze does a lot, where there is like this opener that sounds legit. Like it, in this case, it's like this very sweet rendition of Aloha Oi. And then it like breaks down into the Spike Jonze and his wacky Waikikians. And it gets a little crazy. And there's like all these like mouth noises with like the gulping and these crazy sound effects that don't, and like there's a gunshot in there. It's just like, it's just this totally raucous noise that noise interpretation of the song. And I think what I think makes Spike Jonze really remarkable is that it's like, it's not, his music isn't not only funny, it's like also very musical. Like all of the sound effects are like completely on pitch. It's very well organized. Like it is like strategic funny sounds. It's not just like random funny sounds.
So overall, this album, I'm really not sure what to make of it. To be honest, I don't really know why this is a thing, nor do I understand why these songs were popular in the first place. However, I have to say there are parts that, you know, that are played straight, and I think that they are actually very good. And so I could see how, you know, maybe with his other orchestra work, he, you know, I mean, he, it sounds like he definitely had the musical abilities to play things straight, but definitely, yeah, very strange. It seems like, you know, I guess, I don't know if he did any sort of, or, you know, the people who worked with him were involved in any Foley artistry, but it definitely seems like the same kind of thing that you would hear with all of these random sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, it's interesting that the sound effects are as much of a part of the song as the actual, like, actual instruments themselves. And I think it's interesting that Frank Jacobs writes on the sleeve that a critic once referred to the Jonze Group as a hardware orchestra. The designation had some basis, which seems to me to express a fair amount of understatement. Though I guess reading that Frank Jacobs was a contributor to Mad Magazine, I guess, seems somehow fitting. But I don't understand. There seems to be, like you mentioned, with some of his, you know, vocal artists who collaborated with him, you know, they made a lot of swallowing sounds and farting sounds to be their, you know, their favorite picks. So I don't know. What, I mean, tell me, why does this appeal to you, Felicity?
Well, I mean, like, I think the reason why the swallowing sounds and the farting sounds are a thing is, like, this, if you think about, like, think about the other kind of music that we feature on this show from the 40s and the 50s. It's, like, it's really that super schmaltzy orchestra like music.
Sidney Lipton?
Yeah, like, Sidney Lipton, like, Sven Asmussen.
But Sven Asmussen had, like, you know, his, with the Swedanes, it was kind of a comedy.
Yeah, group. Yeah. And, like, the Georgia Gibbs. Like, it's all this, like, super, like, melodramatic stuff. And I think, like, Spike Jonze is really turning all that stuff upside down. Like, on this album also is a version of Laura, which he did actually play, like, a full version of the theme song to Laura with his other orchestra, played it straight. And in this, on this recording, like the first half, the first minute or so is played straight, and then it goes into like all of his shenanigans. And it's really like, I think it is just like, especially the, like the mouth sounds and like the drunkenness and the farty noises, it's all about like, it's like that's being really subversive about and criticizing and making fun of like this really like, you know, uptight, like loungy kind of dance music. And so it's just like he's just taking it like way, way far off the to the other direction. And so I think that's like, that's why it's a thing. Why people liked it, I don't know. But there's like, you know, he had his own TV show for a little while in the 50s, and he's wearing a suit that's like just like on the cover of the album. It's like this ridiculous like box plaid. And there's like, it's exactly what you would imagine from listening to it. There's people running around the stage. There's people like, it's like, it's a little bit vaudevillian. It's just very, I don't know. It's crazy.
Why do you like it?
Oh, why do I like it? I think it's funny. And like, you know, it's, I like it. I think it's funny, and I like it for the, like, the same, maybe the same reason I like the Marx Brothers movies, that is just like, just so, it's just so over the top silly.
Yeah, I mean, there's the song on here on side one, it's the fourth song on side one, called My Old Flame.
Yeah.
And that song is basically this Peter Lorre imitation. And yeah, he's talking about his collection of human heads. And then at some point he says he can't stand it, that it's driving him sane.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. The whole thing is just bizarre.
Yeah. But I mean, like, as bizarre and like absurdist as it is, it's musically also very good. Like, I
think, but it's not something you would ever be able to like just sit down and listen to because of its preposterousness.
Yeah, maybe. You know, though, like this, it's like, why? I don't know why it's so hard to find Spike Jonze albums, although there were several in Portland. I never see them around here. Maybe it's like all the uptight DC people, you know. Yeah. It's like beyond our refined tastes.
And listen, unfortunately, our version has got some very visible scratching. It looks like, you know, it was the kind of thing that somebody had sitting out on their coffee table.
Yeah, because it was on frequent rotation.
Of course, yes.
But that, you know, I think like, I got to find more albums, because I think because this one is a compilation, it's kind of hard to say, like, and this was released in 1960 after Spike Jonze had died. And so it's like, well, you know, and it, you know, because, yeah, it's like, I really think that he had a very clear vision for what he was doing. And I don't know that he would have put all of these albums on this particular album. And so I got to see if I can, like, track down some original releases of LPs and see, you know, what those are like. If it's still the same sort of barrage of absurdism and noise. Although I have a feeling it is, because he took this stuff on tour, too. And it would be, like, 2.5 hours of, like, fart sounds and explosions and like banging noises. So I think that might just be, that just is his jam.
Well, for more, you can visit our show notes at livinginhifi.com/episode/44. As always, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at livinginhifi. For a longer correspondence, you can email us at feedback@livinginhifi.com. And next week, we have something that was kind of a random recommendation to us, and it turns out something that is, you know, right up our alley. So stay tuned for that, and thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.